Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is my co-host and the newly elected overseer for Vault 33, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Big thumbs up for you, buddy, because, you know, anything associated with Fallout is killing it right now. So, you know, anything for that and you is positive news for me. I'm loving it. It was a great weekend. We talked about it off air, both of us with our Celtics and Rangers love in playoff mode. I'm not in playoff movie mode, though I did record a podcast over the weekend with the guys over at Mike and Oscar. So check out that podcast. That was a lot of fun. So I am maybe a little punchier because we're recording earlier. I did a podcast in between. So, you know, got a little more energy. How are you feeling? You good? Good weekend?
I'm feeling great. Like you said, it was a great weekend. Got a lot done, a lot seen, a lot of good stuff at the movie theater, which we'll talk about. So I'm ready, man. Let's go.
Do you consider yourself as much of a failure as I do for not squeezing in all three movies that came in over the weekend?
Considering what the third movie was, I cannot say I do not. Okay. I do not.
I just for people's sake, we are going to talk about Fallout today, the new Amazon Prime show based on the video game. We are going to talk about Abigail, the vampire horror movie that came out over the weekend. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, the new Guy Ritchie movie. We'll talk about that too. And we'll toss in Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, that came out on Netflix, which was my review for what's on Netflix.com this past weekend. But the one we missed was Sasquatch Sunset, which the only thing that has been great about it, because I haven't seen it, I'm not going to judge it or any of that stuff. Hopefully we can cover it soon. But I have seen some of the press tour, and I saw Jesse Eisenberg, I think on Fallon, where he was explaining like the hand signals they had to do to explain how they wanted sex, where it's just like banging their hands together in front of each other. And now I want to start doing that in public, like at the bar, be like, hey, what's going on? You want some of this? You know, do a little of that. So that's why I was hoping the movie was going to be a bigger success, basically, just so I can integrate that into my social life. Outside of that, yeah, I guess, you know, of the three movies that were out in theaters that we're talking about, that one did get the lower rating, although all of them have been pretty positively rated. So, like you said, good weekend. The box office is interesting. We kind of talked about that off air too. Civil War led the weekend, which was our review from last week. If you just saw it this past weekend, go check out our review of that from last week. I thought we did a very thorough job.
Very lengthy discussion.
Yeah, probably the first time in a long time that we did like a 45, 50 minutes on one movie kind of a thing. So, and well warranted. Good discussion piece. But Abigail came in second with like just a $1 million less, not even, than Civil War. And I was like, isn't this whole thing about horror prints money? And they marketed the shit out of it. I thought that was interesting. And then your favorite monkey titan and his lizard pal dropped down to third. And then we're going to start getting into, you know, the Guy Ritchie film and some other stuff. So, yeah, some interesting numbers coming out of the box office. We'll get to it as we get to each movie. But I figure up top, the thing that's kind of like running stuff out there, which is very rare for Amazon Prime. They must be tickled pink that it feels like so many people are watching Fallout in my small little world. Is that the case for you too?
Yeah, absolutely. The show's running away. Everyone I know is watching it, talking about it.
Now, it's an interesting show. Before we get into the whole thing, obviously this is, as I mentioned before, it's based on a very popular video game, which I've noticed there were mentions that spikes for the video game itself have gone up as well.
Yep.
Yeah. So they got to be very happy with that. This is about a future post-apocalyptic Los Angeles brought about by nuclear decimation, where citizens must live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and bandits. And there's obviously a lot more to that, but they're just kind of giving you the basics of this kind of world that we're living in here. And the few things that come up, and I don't know which order you want to do, whether you want to get into the show first or not, but there's also an interesting discussion I've seen both ways about the fact that this one, they decided to do the binge model, which is why we took a beat, you know, getting it to our review. But also the fact that I see a lot of the discourse. Are we in the new age where video game players are the new I read the book assholes? Because I see a lot of like, well, I've been playing these games for years. Way to catch up, dinguses, because you watched 8 episodes of a show. I've seen some of that, and I'm like, this is aggressive.
I still think they're in a minority, you know what I mean? Because book readers still take the cake, you know, sure, for me, because a lot more people read books, yeah, and they're just slowly now adapting these from actually good stuff from video games. Because, I mean, they've been adapting stuff from video games for years, but very rare do they hit the mark. And outside The Last of Us, this hit the mark. So you're starting to get some of those.
Yeah, and we talked about off air how much I loathe the trailer for Borderlands, where I'm just
God.
This doesn't even seem like it's real. It seems like it was just slapped together by AI. Like it was like a spoof trailer they made. Because I was like, how did they get Kate Blanchett to be in a movie for Borderlands? How often does that happen? Like, her being in an MCU movie makes sense. Her being in something right, like this, I'm like, a video game? Like, Kevin Hart, well, I see.
Yes.
You know, like, but, and Jamie Lee Curtis, fine, borderline. But, wow, the collection of talent they have for Borderlands is astounding.
Another game I did not play, so we'll see. There might be a lot of fans out there, obviously, who are going to love this.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. And I think, you know, Netflix might have the rights for, like, Bioshock and Gears of War coming down the pike and stuff like that.
We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, because I played Bioshock, and it's probably one of my favorite games of all time.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, please, Netflix, don't fuck this up. Like, don't cheapen it. Make it, like, Fallout and we'll be good.
You probably indulge yourself in not only more of the video games than me, but also some of the video game adaptations. I think lately we've been kind of treated to a lot of the better ones because we're in a, yes, you know, Last of Us post period. We're in, you liked, that was on Peacock, right?
Hulu. Oh, Peacock. You're right. With Anthony Mackie.
Yeah. What was that?
Twisted Metal.
So Twisted Metal, you saw, you reviewed on this podcast as well, and you seem to enjoy it for what it was, you know, because it's not some prestige grab or some high budgeted thing. This seems like it has a little more of the budget that it's not full on because it's not taking itself as seriously. It's not full on Last of Us budget. But this seems like right, they put the effort in on Fallout. What are your early impressions, especially when we're comparing it to like a lot of these successful video game adaptations that we've gotten lately?
It's up there at The Last of Us as far as like TV shows, and or I'll throw movies in there as well. Very different, and it's hard to compare this one to The Last of Us because Last of Us was more of a character study, and it was long and drawn out and way more story building than this one. This one did have character building, but it focused on like two main characters, and we'll get into it. But this one was definitely more, if you're looking for more of the entertaining with some more action in it, this would hit it. But, oh, man, this is, I'm loving it, dude. Without spoilers, and get into it, this might be my number one TV show of the year so far.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not higher than like The Gentlemen or things like that in terms of my enjoyment. But what I will say, this show was kind of the dessert that I needed after like eating the hearty, healthy meals of like Civil War or some of these other like prestige-y stuff that we've gone on in the movie realm or even in the TV side where it's like, okay, you know, we're debating things like Shogun or, you know, There's a lot of stuff out there with the prestige level of like Ripley or Three Body Problem or all these other type of things. And this show comes along and I'm like, all the episodes are here and it's like candy. Awesome. Let's do it. Let's just jump in. And I'm like, I'll know within like a couple episodes if it's not up to snuff, so I could just bail if it's not. And I watched the whole thing. It took me like some time just because we have so many things to cover. But with that said, good to see your boy Walter Goggins being able to play not only a ghoul, but also actually a real person with a real family, being a real human being, like having to like dramatic act. Like, you're a stan for Walter Goggins. When was Walton Goggins, excuse me. How long has it been since you saw him play like a normal person? For extended
a normal person, I can't even remember, dude. I mean, because you're
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I can't even remember. I'm in my head, and it's like, no, Vice Principals and Righteous Gemstones. He's always playing a character, man. Like, maybe the closest thing was the Hateful Eight.
That's why
maybe
the
Hateful Eight, maybe.
Yeah, even though he kind of comes in hot in that movie, too, for being such a smaller chamber piece kind of movie, you know, in one location kind of thing. So, yeah. It's interesting because, I thought the same thing. I was like, I can't remember the last time I saw him, like, without some extensive hair and makeup, without some crazy accent, with something, right. You know, extra from him. And this one, he had to ride both sides. And I thought he carried this show between him and Ella Purnell, who plays Lucy McClain. So, did you play? You said you played this video game or no?
I did not play. I never got around to playing this one.
Okay. Okay.
Nothing.
So you had nothing coming in. Do you think that probably helped? I mean, like, because I love going into something that, you know, like, even when I went into the Harry Potters, I hadn't read all of them at when they were going along or whatever. And, like, I just kind of was like, let me just enjoy the movie thing. I'm always that way. Enjoy the movie or the TV series for what it is. Don't have the other thing in your mind. Just, did they do a good job of executing what they put out there? You know? So this one, I thought they did a good job of creating the worlds between the vault and the wasteland. The only thing is, like, number one, I agree. I heard this on another podcast, so I don't want to seem like I'm some inventive person, but we really got to stop with these pilot episodes that are like 20, 30 minutes longer than the actual episodes they do. Yeah. You have all the time. It's a binge model. Fucking just do it. But I think for this one, first of all, what do you think about that? And secondly, the first episode, because they really tried to set up those three specific characters you talked about, including even like kind of putting the names out there, like you're breaking it up. Do you think that had to do with it more than just them trying to set up the world in an extensive way?
The extended pilot stuff, it doesn't bother me, man. In this case, in this show, it didn't, because, again, going into a cold, I knew conceptually what the show was about or the game was about. That's all I knew. I knew the concept of the game.
Right.
So I didn't mind the longer longer pilot episode, because it needed to set up not only the wasteland and the bunker, but the military, robotic, whatever you want to call them, aspect of that world as well, which is seems like its own little separate nation or country or whatever it is. Like, they're all three separate set pieces, apparently. You know what I mean? So I didn't mind.
Yeah, and I like how the further we go into the show, I mean, there's kind of a fourth story here with Norm McClain, like Lucy's brother, and the fallout of what remains. I actually found myself being very drawn to that as it went. Like, I almost was more drawn to Norm trying to puzzle box the thing from underground than Maximus at times. I didn't engage with him. I'm still trying to understand his character more, because I know that they're playing that fine line where it's like, is he good or is he bad? He's kind of riding both sides, but he's aligning himself with basically whatever feels good at the time. So I don't know if how they ended this season, whether, first of all, good for them. It looks like they're instantly going to get a second season. I mean, like, this seems like a big hit. But secondly, as far as that character goes, I think he's the one who's going to be the most, you know, he's like kind of the outlier here, where he could be a wild card in terms of how that story progresses. So how did you find yourself? Who were you more drawn to? How did that kind of flush out for you?
Yeah, it's Goggins.
Of course it's Goggins.
I agree with you. I mean, Goggins carried the show along with Lucy there. Ella, I forgot what her last name was, but you may... Ella Purnell,
yeah.
But her naiveness and being in the vault, of course you're drawn to her story and as it drags along, the stuff that comes out with her dad. So, like, I love the scenes she's in. I love her exploring the wasteland and just being good-hearted with everybody. You know, she had that Girl Scout mentality through the whole thing. She didn't really understand anything. But, you know, Walton Goggins to me as the ghoul. And like you said, as Cooper Howard, just carried the whole show because he got the most background depth as far as character goes because his wife was so integral to the company that created the vaults. And you get some, like, communistic views on Hollywood like it was back in the Red Scare of Hollywood back in the day. So that kind of fleshes out as a little bit of storyline as well. But yeah, Maximus was probably my least favorite character because he starts off, again, he's not a good person to start the show. And he's a person they set up that you want to root for him because of what happens to him in boot camp and he's getting beat up and all that kind of stuff. But he always does stuff for him and he's just a selfish individual and he always takes the easy way or what's ever going to get him benefit. And even when he's like trying to help Lucy out, like, I don't really trust it. Like, he's still ready to throw it under the bus in certain acts. And in the third one, I'm still not coming around to him. Like, him and his sire or whatever, Squire. Tried to like break his ankles and kill him. Like, he was like, what the hell? So I don't, he's my least favorite character, but I think we're going to get a lot more of him moving forward into season two, obviously based on the last episode.
Right.
But yeah, I liked the vault scenes too. Like you said, I like Lucy's brother piecing everything together and going to Vault 31. And when he found out exactly what was there, I was like, holy crap, like, don't do it. Like, don't go in the chamber. You know, I was like, and don't. So, like, his curiosity, I really enjoyed those scenes. Yeah. There wasn't, like, a lot of scenes that took me out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think it'll serve itself going forward, at least, though, now that the way they kind of set it up. I think it's helpful because now, if we're going to see the adventure of the remaining characters, I'm not going to spoil anything at this stage, but, like, how they're going to go on that adventure, but you also see the brother kind of continuing what he has to deal with too. So at least the one thing I liked about this show is that they were able to weave multiple plot lines pretty seamlessly. And, you know, it didn't dwell on one thing for too long, but just enough to kind of keep the line moving. And I don't think it got too bogged down. Nothing was disinteresting at all to where I was like, all right, can we get back to whatever? But I think that's the strength of this show is like maybe the highest highs are not going to beat like other big time shows. But this is a very well produced show with a very deep cast and a lot of storylines that will keep you engaged for what it goes on. In fact, the main storyline that comes to a head at the end, I don't want to say is the least satisfying, but I was like more intrigued along the way than before what we got with the ending. I don't know if you want to get into the ending and some of the more details before we move on to something else.
Yeah, we can talk about it a little. I was satisfied with the ending, like all of the storylines, to be honest with you. But going back to the production value, I just want to piggyback on the production value of the show. It's pretty up there for an Amazon Prime series. And I guarantee you next year it's not getting dropped. They're going to do what they did with Reacher. Like Reacher, season one, they dropped everything at one time. And then season two was weekly. But yeah, I was surprised about some of the cameos they had in this. You had a Michael Rapaport cameo because he was the original Titan in the suit.
Uh-huh.
You had Eric Estrada in the scene.
That was surprising.
Yeah. And then you had Bubba from Forrest Gump in one scene of the show.
Really? I didn't notice that. Which one was he?
He's the one that let the ghoul out of the casket in the first episode.
Oh, I associated with him with something else. That's interesting. Yeah, okay, Forrest Gump. Good guy.
Yeah. So I was like, good cameos in here, man. And it's oddly funny. Like, they threw enough humor in this, like, especially with they meet those strange people from Vault 31. And you had the guy from SNL with the one, Chris Purnell?
Vault 4, but yes.
Vault 4, yeah. He had the one eye. And it was weird. He had that cult scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny, man. Like, there's some funny moments in this show. Like, especially with Maximus and Lucy talking about wanting to have sex now. And,
right.
you know, it just was hysterical, man. So there are funny bits in this, dude, and it's a well-written show. But yeah, let's get into the end of a little bit.
Yeah, well, just to piggyback on the casting, Zach Cherry, Johnny Pemberton, who was the squire that they sent in after Maximus, both stand-up comedians, has comedic backgrounds. So it's interesting that they have a lot of people, a lot of humor on set, like you said, Parnell and everybody else who's done funny things in the past. So a lot of humor there. Whether they're always being funny or not is whatever, but I think they're just really well casted and probably lends to keeping that show nice and light and that set nice and light. So I'm sure it was a blast to shoot, considering who's there, including right. Goggins, obviously. So, all right, yeah. So the ending, if obviously you don't want to know anything about Fallout, we can kind of try to keep this as non-spoiler as we can, but basically, the show, if you're not interested, fast forward a little bit. But, like, the father, like, the whole, like, it's the plot twist of the whole show is, you know, Lucy looking for her dad. And her dad is kidnapped by this woman called Moldaver. And so Lucy's looking for her dad and trying to set him free. And the whole thing is just once she finds her dad, it turns into a lot of things that kind of been strung together throughout the season where, you know, it comes to a point where her father is not who she thinks he is. So it turns into now where season two is going to be kind of the chase to find her father once again. But this time with a more pointed thing of like, she wants to know answers of how her world was created. And obviously with Walter Goggins, the ghoul, in tow, chasing for the exact same thing, including like his family that he had before the nuclear blast. So I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it, like why I think it just kind of didn't like give me this aha feeling, or that once I found out stuff, it didn't like blow me away. So what were your feelings when you were kind of getting the reveal and where it kind of set up for season two?
Yeah, I was more excited about the as it was wrapping up and you had all these, you know, storylines kind of coming into one. I was more excited about the brother and his interaction with that brain in Vault 31.
Yeah. Yes.
Like his ending. Like
buds.
Yeah, exactly. I was more interested in that. So that kind of had me going. I'm like, man, I can't wait to see what happens here. But yeah, yeah, I was okay with the ghoul and Lucy on their new mission, especially Lucy on her new mission, because her whole world is thrown into, like, just chaos, you know, shaking.
Yeah, she just stares for, like, 10 minutes of the final
yeah.
Act of the last episode.
Yeah, exactly, man. So, and apparently, it was by this video gamer, as a dad stepping through the desert and he steps over, they show like these big, the skull with horns. Apparently that's a major character from the video game.
Okay.
So I guess they were teasing that might be in the second season.
Interesting.
I don't know anything about it, but no, I was A-okay with the ending, man. I thought the whole Moldaver. That was kind of anticlimactic. You know, that's the only thing I'm like, wow, yeah. They spent the whole time looking for, and this is how it's going to kind of go. And so yeah, from that aspect, that particular character in her ending in the last episode, I'm like, that's kind of weak. But everything else I was okay with. I'm on board with. I'm like, let's go. Like I got done with the season. I'm like, let's go, just pump another season in my veins and let's go.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's just a good enough setup to get me to more fun and more explanation and things like that. Even if we lost characters along the way, that certain things will still come to light from that era. Because we keep, this right. is the thing about this show, is like, the flashbacks, you know, as they were, I thought worked well enough to see, you know, Walter Goggins, actor, character, kind of, you know, dealing with his wife and Vault Tech and all those things in the past. I thought those had a lot of intrigue to it, you know, in the same way of like Norm, the brother, being left in the vault, like kind of like you're just trying to find the real answers. And I think when the show gets like that, I think it's at its best. But what's surprising to me too is that the action in this show is very well done, like
yeah. Oh,
especially
absolutely.
Especially when of course Goggins gets to like Mexico, you know, like gunslinging, and like people are getting like shot through and like shot in the air and all this other stuff. I was like, wow, this is like cartoony, but like in a fun, cool way.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Like my favorite scene is at the very end when he's explaining to the armor techs, like the knights or whatever, like,
yeah,
did they still make your suit with this, you know, with this defect in it? He's like, let's find out. You know, I thought that was just so cool, man. Like, it's well done, man.
Yeah. And of course, it's just, it's perfect for Goggins to basically look like a fucking, you know, gunslinging Skeletor with the, like, the nose missing and everything. It's just, it's perfect. It's such a great look. And yeah, I think they did a great job of, at least from a non-gamer perspective, matching up the world, or at least making it intriguing enough to get through. And it's a big hit for them. Real quick, because you touched on it already, I agree with the producers, because I guess they went back and forth trying to figure out the drop style, how they're going to market it and release it. And so I agree that this dropping it all at once was a great idea. And I think people just gobbled it up. A lot of people loved it. It's not a prestige-y show to where, like, you need some discourse lingering for, like, awards-y kind of plays or whatever. They knew what they had. So I think dropping it all at once is great. And you bring up Reacher as a great comparison, because that's exactly what they did. They brought you into this world and then went for it, right? Second season, you're right, Reacher switched up. And I don't know if that show, I would have liked it. I don't know. I go back and forth. I think we talked about it when it came out, too, is like, I probably would have liked to have it all. But I did also have a fun time kind of talking with you, like, did you see this week's Reacher? And kind of having that kind of throwback thing, too. But you're right. I think what they dropped three to start three. And then did it. I think that's probably what this is going to do, too. Because they'll probably stage it knowing in advance what they're going to do, have the first three episodes kind of put you in a specific spot, and then let it go week to week and really kind of add more to the puzzle box.
Yeah, because they know they got a hit on their hands, so they're going to string it out. Yeah. Now they get everyone hooked in. You know, they gave us a drug.
Yep.
You know, now we're going through withdrawal.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Yeah. I know. But it's one thing, it's interesting that, like, you don't just go, well, this worked, let's keep doing the same thing, because I think they would appreciate it too. And this is why Netflix has like some legs up with that one, where they've been doing basically almost all that exclusively, like only on their big shows. Maybe they'll do like, they'll drop half and then do the other half, but they don't, you know, and they've never done really the week to week, unless it's like, I don't know if any of their reality shows or whatever they did. But this one is another question thing where I think there is no right answer, and I think a hit will be a hit, but it seems like they really do think about this, and this is, seems to be a working strategy, at least for Amazon Prime, whether it's going to become a trend somewhere else. Like, you're never going to see it with an HBO/Max thing, because they need to feed the beast of traditional cable, but like, you're not going to, when it comes to a straight streamer, there's no rules, and I feel like they're doing it on a case by case.
Yeah, and just to kind of wrap my thoughts on this and Prime and the show, I think there's so many people talking about this show, and this show's on fire right now, and I think it'll continue to be on fire, because I think it reaches a wider demographic than, say, The Boys or Reacher. The Boys, I talk to people all the time. It's a great show, but as soon as I mention superhero, like, oh, another superhero show.
Sure.
Like, no, but you know what I mean? Like, but this plugs into way more demographics, whether or not you like the video game or not. I mean, it's got everything from the ages of 18 to our age. You know what I mean? We're Reacher.
Yeah.
It's a great show, but that's an older demographic. And
it is.
Same thing with the Boys. The Boys is a very specific demographic. It just, you know, again, people have superhero fatigue. And so I think this is going to carry more weight for now than, say, even though I enjoy The Boys more. But it's going to carry a little more weight with a wider audience than, say, those two shows I just mentioned.
Yeah, I agree with that. The interesting thing is that they also, I thought they had two strikes against them, at least in part of like, oh, you think superhero fatigue is a thing? How about post-apocalyptic and or video game adaptation being now new, buzzy, like, geez, how many of these do we have? So I thought it could have gone the other way, but I think they dropping it all at once, people got into it enough and just steadily kept going, and it now become a solid hit for them. So good job. I mean, I'm looking forward to a season two. They got, like you said, the drug is in. We just looking for the next fix. So I like you said, I don't, you said you thought it was higher, but I don't know about entirely that. You seem to be like, I mean, what do we got? What do we say? Two more episodes for Shogun?
One. We're down to one.
One. So, you know, let's talk again in a week or two.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's
being like, fucking Shogun, like to me, like off air. So like, yeah. So we'll see in terms of what you think. But yeah, I guess we'll use that same caveat we did with The Gentleman, where it's like the best completed show.
Yes.
You know, as far as
show,
it goes.
Correct.
And I'm still like, I'm looking forward to, I didn't get to watch the Sympathizer second episode last night, so I'm looking forward to catching up with that tonight and kind of keeping that going too, because that's another show that, you know, I'm into and had a very good premiere. So again, like last year, in the spring, TV kicking films ass a little bit.
Yes, it is.
So, but again, we've sang the praises of Dune Part 2 and some other ones. So there are outliers where it's like, Jesus Christ, we do have the ability. But yeah, TV as a whole is keeping us in gear. So, but with that said, I will say it was a good weekend at the movies. Three that we'll cover of the four that kind of came out, if you include streaming and everything else. We'll start with Abigail because this was a movie that I thought, as I mentioned earlier, like horror prints money and they advertise the crap out of this movie. This is created by people who kind of been running big time horror recently too, with Radio Silence. Team of Matt Bettinelli, Open, and Tyler Gillett. They, you know, are coming off of exiting the Scream franchise. They also did Ready or Not, which I was a big fan of, and this movie kind of, at least the trailer, felt more like closer akin to Ready or Not. I even heard they're doing a second one. I don't know if that's fully coming through, but I heard there's a sequel to Ready or Not coming through. But this movie is, it did okay box office, like we mentioned, and I thought it was going to do a lot more. What was your movie experience, I guess? We'll start there, Shane, with Abigail. Was it a packed theater?
I went on a Friday night at like 8:55, which is late for me.
It is, yeah. You're usually the early bird special. We talk about this. Yeah,
I had to wait and take my daughter to go see it because we've both been looking forward to this for a long time.
Right. I'd love to know what she thought, too. We'll get there.
Yeah. So the movie's about three quarters of full. But it was an audience that really was engaging and enjoying what was going on.
Yeah.
So we had a good experience. It was a good experience, man.
Yeah. In my head, I did have it that I was like, oh, is this not doing as well? Because, like you said, full enough. But for like, I went on a Saturday night, you know, like a 7:30, whatever, you know, that kind of show. And I was expecting it to be like overpacked. But I went multiple times over the weekend because obviously we'll talk about what else we saw. I went Friday night. I went Saturday night. And I was actually like, it kind of tipped like, ooh, this might be a light weekend overall for the fact that we were at least excited to see multiple movies. So I don't know. I guess the proof is in the box office as I thought this was going to have a little bit of a stronger opening. So now that you've seen the movie, which for anybody who doesn't know or didn't see the materials on this one is about a group of criminals who, after they kidnap the ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, they retreat to an isolated mansion, unaware that they're locked inside with no normal little girl. And obviously, if you've seen the trailer and such, this is a vampire film. Where the little girl is a vampire, and then, you know, obviously the mayhem ensues, as mentioned there. It's, again, gotten pretty positive scores. I think it's got like a 3.3 on Letterboxd, 7.1 on IMDb, and a 63 Metascore, which again, horror doesn't usually get much in the green, and this one is in the green for that. So it's getting solid reviews. So I guess two things I want to know from you, Shane. One, what did you think of the film itself? And do you think that maybe because of how you feel about the movie, that it will have more legs or might have a tough time generating the kind of box office that honestly I thought it was going to do?
Yeah, that's a tough question. One, I did really enjoy this movie a lot. Did I like it as much as Ready or Not? No. But I did enjoy this movie, like I said, and my daughter had a blast, which she's 13, so she had a blast.
Yeah.
So we'll get into like what I liked about the movie. But as far as box office goes, I don't think it's going to have legs. It did get good reviews, but you know, I still think Civil War is going to carry some momentum.
Interesting.
Just because of word of mouth, and everyone seems to be watching it now. And this weekend, it may creep up and do well, but after this weekend, I think it'll just keep steadily dropping.
Right.
Because that's when we get into the Fall Guy for Furiosa and all that kind of stuff coming out. But I think for another week, it'll do well. This is a movie where I want to see it again, but just not in the theater. Like, I would go to the theater if I had time to see it again. But if it came on Amazon Prime or Netflix, I would definitely sit there and watch it again. That's how much I enjoyed this film.
Yeah. I like this movie as well. My biggest contention with the movie, I agree with you. I didn't like it as much as Ready or Not. I probably liked it as much or a little bit more than the latest Scream films that they worked on. I like the cast quite a bit. You know, between Melissa Barrera, I thought did better than she's done in any Scream film. So I liked her character more in this. Dan Stevens, I thought was right on point. He's always having fun. He's always being kind of like devilishly good. He's obvious. Who's having more fun than him coming off of Godzilla X Kong? And then now this. So, and then the girl who played Abigail, you know, was good. I thought, again, a deeper cast. But honestly, I thought my favorite person was Catherine Newton, which she needed a win for me after we kind of took we took that movie to task. So I'm glad that she had fun with this one and I liked her quite a bit. My biggest contention with the film is I think it suffered from too many ending disease, and I felt the runtime as the movie got later in the stages, because I felt like they just wanted to keep it going and adding more layers. And I think sometimes they do that because they're trying to tip for a larger universe or that there is more outside of this instead of just let's get this one good and let's go. But outside of that, I was having fun, and I don't care if you're 13 or, you know, about to be 42 in my case, vampires exploding is fucking amazing. All right. And I'm sure your daughter and or you also agree, because every time it happened, like where they're popping like zits, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it was awesome. There was one point in the movie where I was laughing and my daughter looks at me like I'm insane. She goes, Dad, why are you laughing at this part? I found it hysterical. And it was the part where Abigail took the cross off of Peter, the muscle.
Yeah.
And it was like repeatedly stabbing him like a pincushion in a fast motion.
Yeah.
I was dying, and my daughter's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, it's funny.
It is.
It's funny.
It's fun. The only thing, and again, I feel bad because he just passed away. Like, it seems like Angus Cloud was in everything before he happened to pass away. And he's in this one too, doing a really hammy, you know, kind of like thug non-pro character. But they kind of knew what they were doing with it, so I'm not going to belabor it, but like, God, man, I was like, let's kill him first, please. Let's get him out of the way and then go from there. But yeah, like I said, deep cast. You got Giancarlo Esposito. I won't get into the father stuff because it seemed like they tried to tuck that away and they might do more. It was kind of a reveal. Obviously, he's not in the trailer or anything, so I'm not going to get into that. But I also was kind of like, okay. You know, I wasn't like, ooh, it's him, you know, as opposed to like, especially when you have guys like Giancarlo Esposito being like a smaller character, you kind of need to, in my brain, it was like, you need to really upstage even that thought to be the father that comes in the end. But whatever, not my problem. But as far as this particular film goes, I had a good time.
Yeah,
and if you want to put a grade on it, you're you seem to be higher, so you want to put your grade on that one?
Yeah, before I put the grade on it real quick, I agree with you. I wish they didn't show the father at the end. I was okay with it. I prefer him not to be in the ending of the movie. And it kind of ruined it. Not ruined it, but it took me down a peg when they showed him. Because if they're going to show him, like, okay, let's show the big bad dad. I thought he was going to be someone famous, I guess.
That's like, what I was going with. Yeah, that's why I'm trying not to say the name. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
you need it to be bigger than the people who are already in the movie.
Yeah. I gave this, though, because, again, the cast and Dan Stevens was awesome, but I gave it a 3.5. I gave it a 3.5. I wanted to give it a 4, but I had to, like, just shove my biases to the side. I'm like, okay, Shane, just put your critic hat on. I gave it a 3.5. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I think I'm right there, too, because I was like, all right, comparing it to the other horror films, especially we've done a bunch lately, right? I liked it better than Immaculate. I think it's a little more fun, a little more consistent than Late Night with the Devil, but I appreciated that the inventiveness of Late Night with the Devil. So they're like kind of on par. So, and I gave that one 3.5. So I think that's where I land with this one as well.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Next film is the latest from Guy Ritchie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This is, you know, you could say it's his, I'll stay on the film side. It's his follow-up to a two-movie year that he had last year where we kind of did the coin flip of The Covenant. We gave rave reviews but didn't fully feel like a Guy Ritchie movie. And then we had Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre earlier on in that year where I didn't enjoy myself as much with that. I thought it was... It didn't have a lot of momentum. I couldn't latch on to the story very much. And I kind of felt a little lost at times or disengaged. This movie, you know, it brings in a little bit of everything with the Guy Ritchie thing, right? It brings in some awesome cast. We're going back to like kind of British little fuckery, you know, for a lack of a better term. It's posh, it's government, but yet it's, you know, the underground guys you don't want. We mentioned things like Inglourious Basterds before in terms of this, where it's, but it's not that because it's not as violent. It's not as like intense, this movie. So I don't want to make that comparison anymore. But obviously think of it like, you know, an unsanctioned mission. You're going to be like, okay, well, that's the best film thought I could think of. You know, it's like the A-Team or whatever. But it's like government's little project. This movie made a very low sum. We talked about it. Like, it didn't light up. It kind of, like, feels like Guy Ritchie doesn't have the cachet at the box office anymore. I was shocked at the number being, like, $8.9, you know, $9 million, whatever. Hasn't gone or hasn't reported internationally. But I don't know, man. For having... you know, the guy who plays Reacher, when we talked about how big that hit is, Henry Cavill's a name, and I thought this was going to have a little bit more, but it didn't. So talk to me about the film itself for you. This is a historical film, which I don't know if Guy Ritchie's really gone like pulling from the exact pages, but it's a British military who recruiting a small group of highly skilled soldiers to strike against German forces behind enemy lines during World War II. So tell me what you thought. You and I are both big fans of Guy Ritchie, and we've seen all kinds of sides of him, and this seemed to be another shade of what he's doing, especially lately.
Yeah, this was a movie where I thought he straddled with his old stylistic Guy Ritchie stuff, especially when you come to not even the battle... I don't even call them battle scenes, but like when they take over that little German, when they try to break the guy out of that German jail, you know, those scenes.
Yeah.
That was like more old school Guy Ritchie. And then you had like the straightforward Covenant Guy Ritchie, especially when they're with Elsa Gonzalez's character, when she's trying to infiltrate and make nice with whatever German commander, admiral that was.
Right.
So I thought it straddled between straight-laced and Guy Ritchie action, but I liked the balance, but... This movie to me shined, and it had a great cast. You had Henry Goulding in here. I mean, Cary Elwes. I mean, it was a good cast. I liked it. But to me, it's when you had Superman and Reacher on screen together, man. Like that, Henry Cavill and Alan Richson.
Yeah.
Carried this movie, man. Like, anytime them two are together, especially the opening scene when they're on the boat and the Swedish fisherman, I love that scene.
Same.
I liked Reacher's character with the bow and arrow and the knife. And, like, he had the same thing with the Abigail thing. He's, like, pinning him, like, real fast with the knife. And then them two together carried the movie for me, and they made all the action. But I went back and forth because I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I liked it. But I'm like, is it because he's drawn a historical mission that maybe it's more not as like Guy Ritchie as I wanted it to be Guy Ritchie? You know what I mean? Like, to me, it was
I think there's
Guy Ritchiness.
Yeah, I think there's a reason for that because he wasn't on the writing team as much with this. And there's like so many writers. And I feel like the farther he gets away from a project where he's more director first and not fully in, it seems, I feel like that's when you can tell that the fastball isn't there.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way. Like, something was taken off the pitch. Like, it was an off-speed pitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it was.
But I really did enjoy it. The only thing that took me out and I didn't like was Rory Kinnear as Churchill. I thought did a terrible job, and it just kind of took me out of those scenes he was in. It was like, whatever. Yeah. But, yeah, overall, I had a good time with this movie, man. Like I said, Cavill was having fun. And people, I think they don't appreciate Cavill. I'm not saying he's like, you know, this George Clooney of an actor, but he's in enjoyable films. And to me, like, everyone craps on him because they associate him with the Man of Steel and, you know, that universe. I'm like, no, he's actually an entertaining and good actor. Because another Guy Ritchie movie I liked him in was The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought he was great in that. And no one saw that movie, you know?
And listen, he's the reason why Mission Impossible Fallout is my favorite one of that series. Like, he has a lot. And I actually had this conversation with my brother not too long ago. And I think part of it is, too, and not to get too off topic, but look at how much The Witcher suffered as soon as they were like, let's pull, like, he's going to pull out, that we're going to replace The Witcher, or we're going to, like, make the storyline less about him as The Witcher. That show just went to crap. Like, when it was Henry Cavill having fun and doing that character, people were like gaga for that show. It was a huge hit, and it just died. They didn't make it about Henry Cavill.
Yeah, I had a good time with this movie, but I was expecting a little more Guy Ritchie's, how I'll sum up my... But it's worth seeing in the theater. If you're a Guy Ritchie fan, to me, it's an up from that Despero whatever movie you were talking about. A step up from that.
Despero. That's the character from Psych. By the way, Cary Elwes continuing on. Right? Congratulations. But yes, Operation Fortune. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but not as good as The Covenant, obviously. But I had a good time.
I agree. It's kind of sandwiched between those two films in terms of quality. I think this wasn't as much a Guy Ritchie thing. I felt like he put some of his little touchstones on there, especially in certain scenes. And I think those are the scenes you kind of called out. I think the action's well done in here. I think those scenes either on the water or, like you said, the prison scene or things like that, that's when I was having the most fun and it was a good time. But I will be honest, when they're doing the whole setup and kind of going on other characters, I was kind of like second screening a little bit, even in the theater. I was like, this isn't a good thought. So to me, It's a change up instead of a fastball. You know, it doesn't have that zip, that verve, that energy, that quippiness that I like from Guy Ritchie when he's at his best. It's hard to also come at this movie post Gentleman because that show is so much fun and has some of it has more of the Guy Ritchie qualities we like. So it's, again, another step of a come down and a different shade with him there. So this one, I actually appreciated the historical sense of this movie because I didn't really quite know this one. So I kind of liked the chess match a little bit, like the chess pieces and how important this mission was to everything to come. Because, you know, how many times have we seen any kind of World War II movie, but a lot, like, you feel like you know all the history, right? And then, like, something will pop up, something gets declassified, and you go, wow, that was really important, and you just, you know. Yeah. But what I would say is it so important that it needed a 2-hour runtime? Probably not. So, to me, I thought it could have been tighter, a little bit zippier. And if anything, if you're going to use the amount of time, you want to use the runtime effectively. Give me more of the characters that stand out that you want to like give their backstory with at the end of this film and give the historical perspective and everything else, because I feel like it just goes wayward because they're in two separate sections that they don't concentrate as much on the people in the boats and their relationship and how to set up the mission or even like why they chose them, right? Like, so it has a little bit of a, it's a split personality kind of movie, but it's good, not great Guy Ritchie.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
It's a 3 for me, probably. Because it's not, I didn't like it as much as Abigail. I didn't have as much fun in the theater or any of those type of things. But there is good enough stuff there that I think that it puts me in a 3.
My heart wants to give it a 3.5 based on something you gave another movie. But I'll give it a 3 as well. Like, I can't bring it higher than a 3.
Interesting. Okay, so call me out. What are we bouncing off of here?
The next movie we're going to talk about briefly.
Okay, and again, I've explained that a little bit, and I still have to kind of like wrap my mind around it. But so the next movie is the latest Zack Snyder movie, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, which this one was a tough one because anyone, if you want to read my review online, I gave it a 3 out of 5. Which is what Shane is referring to. And even on Letterboxd, I gave it a 3 out of 5 because I was comparing against the rest of the Netflix slate of what I was giving those scores to. And part of the problem, I've mentioned this before with my reviews, is that I can't give half stars. So in my heart of hearts, I'm like, I'd probably give it a 2.5. But then I went back and like, I was like, well, does that mean I overrated things like Shirley or other things where I was like, where I gave those 3s, because what I will say about this movie, and obviously you will only care if you like Zack Snyder even a little bit, or if you watch part 1 and are interested in part 2, or you saw part 2, right? This movie is, I thought, a slight upgrade from the first movie. And the big reason why is because what Zack Snyder and his writing team on this particular series of films has trouble with is world building and dialogue and trying to set up drama. And I thought this movie had like a good 45 minutes or like the large part of the second half of that film was all action. And what Snyder does best is basically high-end action. And whether you get tired of his relentless slow-mos or whatever is, you know, obviously a thing, but as far as this one seemed way more straightforward, this is a battle. This is a war film. This is just get to the point, fight the big bad, who I didn't think was bad. Ed Skrein, I think, does a good enough job of being the heavy. The problem is that Zack Snyder can't help himself to where, like, the first half of the movie, you're like, we're going to do slow-mo intense farming scenes? But, yeah. You know, like, I'm going to take my warriors and, like, have them freaking baling hay turning grain into flour. What are we doing? So I did have those moments, too. So don't think I didn't. It's just, I think the movie was a tale of two halves, where the first one I was like, what are we doing? And the second half I was like, okay, I can ride with this. And I think maybe because the second half was so much better than the first half that I think I gave it just a tick up. Because when I think about the first film, I can't take away much. So to me, at least, I was like, if I was in it for like a stretch, then it's better than the first one.
Yeah, I mean,
it's probably a 2.5 is what I'm saying. But it's hard to not give it a 3 when I'm comparing it to the other Netflix.
Yeah, when you compare it to the, I agree there. But like what we just discussed, Henry Cavill in that movie, like that movie, if you're grading this a 3, that movie should be a little higher, but I see what you're grading against, right? And I did read your review, and that's why I was like, really? He gave it a 3? Okay.
Well, you hate my cheat codes, and if I could, I'd give probably Ungentlemanly Warfare a 3.25 if I could.
Right. No, you're right. And you're going to score. Like, I understand it, right? But, like, going to this movie, again, we both, I didn't have high hopes, you didn't have high hopes, and I saw the Rotten Tomatoes score on this. I didn't read any reviews because I don't like to do that, but I was like, gosh, damn, 12%? I think I texted you like 12%, really?
Yeah.
Now, I don't mind the Zack Snyder slow-mos, right? But I thought they were excessive in this movie, and yeah, at some points, laughable. Like the part where they taught the villagers how to fight, and there was that scene where the guy pops out of the ground with a 50 cal. It took him 5 minutes to pop out of the ground, and Ed Skrein's looking around like, well, just take your gun out and shoot him, because it took 10 minutes for him to pop out with that gun.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Come on. Like, it just, the slow-mos got me. The whole first half of that movie got me. It's like, okay, let's go around the table and tell everyone's fucking backstory about why they're
I
here.
Hated that scene. And I mentioned it in my review.
Oh, I know you
review.
Did. You did yeah, mention yeah. it. You did. And I'm like, Ed Skrein was fine. I'm not bagging on him. But the whole movie's called Scargiver. And his lieutenant's like, aren't you going to cover that up? And he's like, I'm going to wear it like a... You show it to the main character one time. It right. doesn't have any meaning to it.
It
so don't call the movie Scargiver, God damn it. And why not send Anthony Hopkins' robot in there to destroy everybody? It's like that robot decides to fight when he wants to fight. Like,
they
I don't
had
know
no idea what
thing.
To do with that character. They have no right. idea. I feel like it's all being set up for something later that they might not even get to make that movie.
Yeah. And then we get the, you know, Sophie Boutella's background, and with Cary Elwes again. Cary Elwes is king or whatever he is, and the daughter, I won't spoil it for who haven't seen Rebel Moon yet. She does yeah. something she thought she did, and it's like, well, how did the, okay, whatever, man. Like, it's like, it just, and then the end when she's fighting with him, like, you just might as well be holding lightsabers at this point. Like, come on, yeah. man. Like, it just, I don't know why, but I just felt very irritated and bothered with this film. And I didn't care about any of the characters. That's my biggest, I was like, I didn't care about these characters at all. I'm like, okay, flaming yeah. hot sword, hot, she drops it, but she's going to put a cloth around it. Now she's good to carry a flaming sword around. Get the hell out
yeah.
of here.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. It was too disjointed for me. And I don't know. I guess thinking about it, maybe a slight step up because it was action heavy at the end. I'll give him credit for like the last 40 minutes where just like boom, 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 all the stuff going on. But at that point, I was like, can we just wrap this up now? Like, because you said story-wise.
yeah.
Story-wise, I had nothing. Like, it didn't draw me in. Dialogue was bad. Like, and I defend that. I'm not one of these crazy Zack Snyder nuts, but even the hardest hardcore Zack Snyder's got to step back from this film, both these films, like, you know, that might have been a miss, but no, I got some people saying they really liked the first one. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like,
that I can't abide by. Yeah.
yeah. So I don't know, man. Like, so I gave it a, I'll tell you what, I gave it a 2, man. Like, I just, I'll never watch this movie.
I can't
again.
Fault you.
Yeah. yeah. I just, and again, I like, we go back and forth with Zack Snyder. I like some of his films. I defend some of his films. And in this one, he just missed the mark for me. And I like Sophie Boutella, and it's a shame because I do like her as an actress. I like generally what she's in.
Yeah.
I just didn't care about the story. Like you said, the Anthony Hopkins robot character was all over the place. I'm like, what the hell is going on here, man? I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. If you had, I don't know if I said it in my review, but I wanted to, where if you like took a shot for every time we have to hear her backstory, like, all right, because again, because she told the truth to some people, but not everybody. So she kind of puts it out in drabs. And then it's like, they have scenes where it's like, oh, this is this big reveal. It's like, no, we know. We yeah. all know. It's like, but you can't make it like a big dramatic scene every time she says it to some new person. It's like,
right.
okay. between two movies, I've heard it like 7 times. Can we stop now? And that's why when she reluctantly doesn't say anything when they do that round table, I was like, really? You told everybody else. You know?
I know. Like, what are yeah. you doing? Like,
I couldn't take it. So I'm with you, man. We're not too far off. I just think
no.
it's a tolerance issue, basically, because especially I was so disappointed in the first one. I went to freaking New York to watch it in a man. Movie theater, and I still was like, what is this movie? Is this an unfinished movie? Like, I had like those kind of problems. And but I think partially what you're saying is what I want to say many times too. Snyder can't help himself. He can't just let a movie be like a straightforward battle thing, whatever. It always has to have some extra thing to it, something to advance the story when it's like you're lucky if you even get to make part three. Like, and if you do, it's going to be at a severely reduced budget, so I don't even know what you think you're going to pull off. And the whole end of part two is like just pushing forward, and that's why I was like, why I just couldn't take it. I was like, and especially whenever he has so many characters in this particular series that I think he just, that none of them are deep enough. None of them, like you said, I don't care about most of them. And then when they become big parts at certain times, you just kind of go, okay. Like you don't feel that kind of rah-rah thing, especially the ending of that movie, which I won't get into, obviously, when it's the not only spoiler for that film, but for like everything in that franchise, as it were. But yeah, I don't see it. I think Snyder got very lucky that he shot these movies back to back, so that way he could do that quick back to back release schedule, and then probably this will die out. But if he gets a third one at a reduced rate, I can kind of see it, because there are enough of his fans out there, and you can kind of sell that you still have Zack Snyder making movies. But I don't know.
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
Yeah, and you mentioned this movie's going to be in trouble, because they did. You went to New York to see the first one. They were kind of like advertising it, talking about it, like putting stuff out there. And this one kind of like they just kind of like didn't push it at all.
No.
And I'm like, okay.
The first one they rolled out. Yeah, the first one they rolled out the red carpet. The second one I was like, I might actually go to the, you know, to see this in a movie theater if it's available. And I was like, this is nowhere. And then as far as like, you know, you don't want to do the inside baseball, but like it didn't seem like they were too, you know, I heard around the internet that it wasn't just me, that was they were slow on maybe screener access or other things too. So I didn't see a lot of marketing. So it had its, you know, it had its issues, and they kind of know. But what's weird is that when I watch, and I think that's maybe partially also why I gave it like slightly more of a pass than maybe some other people, where I was like, oh, you were dodging it when this is better than the first one. And the first one you were rolling out the carpet. So I didn't understand it. So maybe I was just like, it wasn't as bad as I thought. So when something gives you that kind of like, oh, cool, you didn't completely waste my time, thank you. So you'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, it's somewhere in that 2.5, 3. It currently has like a 2 on Letterboxd, so you win the Price is Right closer to the score thing. But you know, it's whatever.
Don't worry, folks. Next year we'll have on Netflix the Snyder cut of Rebel Moon back to back. You know, the 6-hour director cut.
I heard August.
August, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So we'll see, buddy.
It'll be in black and white.
Yeah. But I heard, again, this is so dumb, I don't want to get derailed on this too, but I heard obviously longer cuts, but way more violent and also a little more levity. And I was like, then why'd you make two different movies? He literally said in like interviews, he's like, we would shoot it for the way that we're going to release the theatrical or Netflix original version. And then he said like, they'd stay in that scene and shoot it completely different to like make his vision version later. Ugh. And I'm like, how does this keep happening? Whether it's to him or whether how do you not get on the same page for such a big budget film to be like, they let you shoot two movies back to back, but essentially they let you shoot four movies and you're still like dissatisfied and you have to like make all these different it's annoying.
I know.
But what's sad is I'm going to probably freaking watch them or have to watch them and then try to decipher. And if they're better, then what does that say too? Like, if they make Rebel Moon 3, are they going to make a continuation of his vision that got better critical reviews? No. We'll probably have to do this dance again. So what are we doing?
I don't know.
So
that's
anyway.
That's not for you, folks.
Yeah, and that's it for this episode, too, because I've had it. Great job by you, man, catching all this stuff, the same as me, you know, putting in the work, getting these reviews out here. Great job by you. Thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to like us, subscribe, check us out in the socials at Recent Act Pod. Like I mentioned, my review, if you want to see in length for Rebel Moon 2, that's my latest review on what's on Netflix. And also check out me talk about Netflix as like a whole, like a Netflix State of the Union type episode on Mike and Oscar, which is out now. So go check out them as well. Be sure to come back next week. I don't, do you have like the thought of like, I know we've been teasing, like we got some TV we got to catch up with. Is, what's the big aha for this weekend? I thought it was kind of a chill weekend, right? As far as the big movie to come out.
For me, it's a Boy Kills World. Like you said last week, that's a Shane kind of movie. That's
it is the Shane movie, and I will see it. But yes. I will tell you, what is it? H. John Benjamin? Is that the voice that they use? I'm like, it's too distracting. It's hard for me to even watch the trailer. So I hope the violence and the story and minimal use of the voice is what I get out of that movie.
Yeah. But my aha moment of the week is Shogun, the Shogun season and series finale.
Yeah, which of course, you know, now that's probably my homework, right, for the next week. I got to, like, catch up and do all that stuff. So it's going to be an interesting week, a little lighter than usual. But we will be back covering all of it because that's essentially what we do around here. So be sure to, like I said, subscribe. Don't miss an episode and be back with us next week for more Recent Activity.